Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, your place to go for on-demand Titans coverage that is 100% free of the nonsense that we always see in sports talk these days. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of No Nonsense, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. We are here to recap the Titans' win over the New Orleans Saints, their sixth in a row in 2021. Impressive stuff from the Titans. We'll be joined later on by Teron Davenport of ESPN.com. To talk about the Titans, we will talk with Teron about Ryan Tannehill. We're going to talk with him about Todd Downing and the coaching staff and how this offense of the Titans can get out of the fog, the haze that they've been in for the last couple of weeks. We will, of course, address those topics amongst ourselves as well, but we're very excited to have TD on in just a little bit. Let's start here, guys. Titans are 8-2. Heading into week 11 against the Texans, so they'll be 9-2 after that. Wow. Who would have thought after the first 4 weeks of the season, which included a disastrous blowout loss to the Cardinals and then losing on the road to the Jets, that the Titans would be in this position where they've won six straight, two of those without Derrick Henry. They're the number one seed in the AFC right now with a two-game lead. Of that position, they're rocking and rolling.
Yeah, this is crazy. Like, I don't know who possibly could have seen this coming, especially given the stretch that they had the last five games. Like, I know the Saints aren't a great team, and they had lost Jameis Winston, but they're still a very solid defensive team and a very well-coached team. And then add to that, they beat the Rams, they beat the Colts on the road. They beat the Chiefs. They beat the Bills. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I didn't see this coming, but it's fantastic. And they've put themselves in a really great position to come away with possibly the one seed in the AFC. I think they have a two-game lead on the next closest team in the AFC.
Yes, that's correct.
Plus they already have the tiebreakers over the Bills. And the Chiefs, which is huge, and I guess the Colts, if you want to say that they're close. So great position, and it's great. It's just a good time to be a Titans fan, even though they are dealing with a lot of injuries. But the bye week is coming soon, and I think that's going to even further rejuvenate the team.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much said it all. It's, you know, they throughout rotating seemingly every play on the roster at least once. I don't know how they're able to continue to win, because the team that won on Sunday is completely different than the team that won against Buffalo, which is completely different against than the team who won in Seattle. Like, regrettably, kudos to Mike Vrabel for just being able to see the bigger picture and make that work, because, for all the stuff I think he does wrong, I mean, he sure seems to understand at the very least how to instill that, you know, next man up mentality that they preach so much. Because, I mean, Greg Maben, I'm trying to list off all the play. I mean, Naquan Jones got a sack this game. I mean, like, every time it seems like they have a surprise injury.
The linebacker.
Every single linebacker.
What's his,
you're 53? Dylan Cole,
yeah.
He has a forced fumble. Like, the fact that, you know, I think we've had different starting linebackers in every single game this year, like, from the week before, just a constant shuffle.
They haven't had the five starting O-linemen, Lawan, Saffold, Jones, Davis, Quisenberry, play an entire game together yet.
Nope. And, I've said this a bunch before, but I don't think they've had the same starting wide receivers or the same starting offensive line in back-to-back games all season, which is insane. But, linebackers really cracks me up, because it's like, you have two of them. Like, the Titans start two guys, and they yeah. can't get those same two to be on the field. Like, and, you know, in some cases, it's been good for the Titans. Like, David Long is awesome. And, you know, if Jayon and Rashawn are healthy, Vrabel's not switching them from the starters. I mean, those are your starters if those guys are both healthy. Like,
David Long is a starter if he's healthy. Vrabel has said that.
I think Vrabel said that he had started the past two games after Jayon got hurt.
One of the three of them have been hurt a lot lately. So, well, jury's still out on that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, like, it seems like we've learned a lot about the depth of this team, their ability to step up, and, you know, I guess give them credit for cutting Bobby Hart, because, you know, we've seen Matt Dickerson stay on a roster for a long time. We've seen, you know, other guys stay on a roster for a long time that didn't deserve to be there. So, I don't know. I mean, this is all good news, and it's hard to be upset when you win and you're 8-2.
Update, you mentioned Vrabel coaching very well. We talked last week about DraftKings Sportsbook having Vrabel as tied for second for Coach of the Year. He is now in sole possession of first place on DraftKings Sportsbook ahead of Cliff Kingsbury. I could see it happening. I mean, we talked about it last week. The narrative sets up perfectly, losing Henry and the team staying together. And let me say this about Vrabel, because there's going to be a lot of people who don't know anything about the Titans that tell you Mike Vrabel is a leader of men, and that is why he is, stop, okay? Leader of men stuff is nonsense. I agree, leadership is his crowning jewel, but not in like a rah-rah pregame speech for the boys kind of thing. What Vrabel is good at, and I've said this over and over again, but I'm going to say it again, Vrabel is good at organizing people. The same thing that made Hugh Jackson, I always want to say Hugh Jackman, the same thing that made Hugh Jackson a disaster with the Cleveland Browns is what makes Vrabel good with the Titans. Hugh Jackson could not manage people. His staff members came out and said it was like working for Michael Scott. Mike Vrabel is good at managing people. Mike Vrabel has the same qualities as a head coach that a good business operator has. He manages well. He sets people up for success. He's a good communicator. So when people tell you that Mike Vrabel's strength is his leadership, yes, that is correct. But not because he's going to put something on the wall about how ESPN's saying the Titans aren't a real 8-2 team and that's going to get the boys all fired up. No, it's because he's good at managing people. He's a good communicator. He's a good facilitator of success.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a player's coach, you know. I don't really like to use the term culture, but I mean, that's what he's good at. He's good at building a culture and just having everybody in line, and also having everybody kind of buy in to what he wants and what he wants the team to be. And it works. It works. And I do think he's probably going to win Coach of the Year if this continues, if the Titans just keep winning games. I would say probably the other two guys that are close would be Cliff Kingsbury, like we mentioned, and possibly Matt LaFleur, who we know very well from his 1 year with the Titans. So it's crazy. I mean, we have ragged on Vrabel in the past, and we've even done it this year. And there are still things that he does that we aren't totally sold on, and they kind of bother us, but it's kind of hard to argue with results. Not only this year, but throughout his entire tenure, the Titans have just been a consistent winning team, and we've pleaded for them to finally take the next step, and they're doing it. Like, they're doing it this year. They're 8-2. They're going to win double-digit games. And they might get the one seed, they might win a couple of playoff games, and they might make it to the Super Bowl, because nothing has pointed to the contrary so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you can say, well, now the offense has to funnel through A.J. Brown, but then you have a game like Sunday where A.J. Brown gets one catch and they still win. And it's like, well, you know, they need people to step up on the pass rush. And, you know, they may have three guys with 10 sacks. Like, oh, they need better play from their corners. It's like, oh, okay, well, Christian Fulton is one of the best corners in the NFL when he's on the field, and he's back healthy now and looks like he hadn't missed a beat. Like, they need somebody to step up on offense. Marcus Johnson has 100 yards receiving. Like, I don't know how this keeps happening, because it does just seem like there's a narrative out there that they're trying to bust each week, and it seems to be busted. But I mean, it, like I said, it's great for them. I mean, you're right. Like 8-2 with the inside track towards the one seed and a bye week. I mean, the bye week for this team would be so important with how injured they've been, to basically get what I think the first week of December is when the Titans have a bye week naturally, to get another bye week like 5.5 weeks later, whatever it would be. I mean, that would be really good for this banged up team.
Well, you mentioned something there that they're winning in more ways than one. The offense sputters out, the defense can bring them through. I think that's been a very impressive part of this team this year. The fact that they have won in a lot of different ways. They've won with Henry carrying them. They've won with explosion in the passing game. They've won with smothering team on defense. I think that's a display of maturity for this team, kind of like what you were talking about, Matias, where we've seen them grow. And off of that, I have this question for y'all. Have they matured to the point where they are finally detoxing from their adversity addiction? Because we talked in week four, when after the Jets game, whenever that was, we talked about how this team under Vrabel has consistently been poor when they don't have a chip on their shoulder. They didn't really have one against the Saints. The Saints were playing a bad quarterback in Trevor Siemian. The Titans were favored. I don't think anybody really looked at that game and expected the Saints to win without Alvin Kamara. And they went in and took care of business. It wasn't pretty, but I felt like the Titans kind of controlled it from start to finish. There was never a point watching that game where I was like, oh no, here they come. Like, even at the end, I was always like, well, this is the Titans game to lose. Have they grown out of that? Is it over? Or should we still in the back of our head have the yeah, but?
I don't know. That's
just like, I'm the same way. Just when I start to buy in, that voice in the back of my head is like, but you know Mike Vrabel too well, you know?
Yeah. It's just, I just know that in the NFL, any week, anyone could beat you. And we've seen it happen to pretty much every team this season. Like, it just keeps happening. And it just happened to the Titans with the Jets game. I don't know. Like, I could see them dropping a game or two for the rest of this season, but I could also see them just beating everyone and finishing 15-2. Honestly, because they just keep finding ways to win. Like we said, when the offense isn't playing well, the defense, you know, picks up the slack. Or in the Colts game, when the defense looks like it's kind of reverting back to old habits, the offense comes through, scores, you know, 30. Well, they scored 27 because one of them was an interception return for touchdown. But anyway, the offense did enough to get that overtime win. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, the Titans just keep finding ways to win, and they're doing it with players that really shouldn't be performing as well as they should. But, like, the next man up mentality for this team is very real. Like, players are just coming in when they're not supposed to, or they really shouldn't have to, and they're just performing it. We've seen it with a lot of cornerbacks on this team. We saw it with Marcus Johnson this past week. Deontay Foreman is out there, like, with some juice, making plays, even in the receiving game. It's just great to see, and I do feel like this team, I don't know, they kind of feel like a team of destiny, and I hope that continues to be the case throughout these last couple of weeks and into the playoffs.
Well, real quick, I just want to throw out that stat that Mike Vrabel brought up, where the Titans have used 82 different players so far with what? They've played 10 games, so there's 7 left, and the record's 84. And Vrabel said, take the over on that one.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he basically had to alert everybody to that record because nobody was really sniffing that out, and then he kind of said that, and Kaharski asked him if he knew what the record was, and yeah, he said, yeah, we're 2 away from it. And so, yeah, I mean, now, all right, Everybody put a pin in the injury stuff because I have a theory I want to talk about in a second.
Oh dear.
Which I've talked to y'all about before a little bit too, I think. But the addiction to need to overcome adversity. I will say I don't think I felt comfortable until after the Saints game, because the Saints game was a classic NFC game. You don't play them a lot.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
Yeah, like it felt like a game where they could have snuck up and come in and stole a win and gone away. And it wasn't prime time. It wasn't the week Derrick Henry hurt himself, so everybody could get hyped up behind that. It was a very good place for a letdown game, and it didn't happen. So I do think that helps a lot. Now, let's talk about the injury stuff. So they're obviously injured. Like, they get injured. They're injured more than any team in the NFL. I do think that there is, again, you have to remember that Mike Vrabel is, one of his redeeming qualities is that he is a master manipulator of the rules, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know how many people saw this. I noticed it happen. The clock was running on Sunday before a 2 minute when the Titans were in the red zone, and they had to delay a game, but the clock ran after the delay a game, and it forced Sean Payton to take a timeout. I would imagine that was completely intentional. Because it forced Payton to take a timeout. It ended up making a difference in the end. Like, that was a very smart thing that, it's taken a penalty to manipulate the situation, and he won't get credit for it, so that's his credit for it there. Similarly, the injured reserve rules, where you can basically juggle these guys, and we've seen them do it, you basically juggle them from active roster to injured reserve to active roster to cut them and bring them back on the practice squad. You can move so many guys around to make them available for game day that if you understand where you're deep, like Roberson going out, Roberson was hurt for sure, but it also was one of those things where it's like, we can bounce him here because Ola Adeniyi has stepped up and he needs to be active, and let's see what we have in him. And that they've kind of done it with a few different players at corner. They've done it some. I'm surprised they haven't done it with Rashawn at linebacker. They did it with Laurell Murchison at defensive tackle, and they bounced guys around that way. Like, they have done that, and I think the number of players that have been put on injured reserve, quote unquote, is a little bit overblown, because I do think that's part of manipulating this to keep guys healthy around your team for as long as you can. But yeah, having said all that, they've been super injured, and it's incredible to be in the position they are despite almost breaking that record.
You hit the nail on the head there. They have been really good with the roster manipulation. Robinson obviously deserves a lot of credit for that too. I think he's done a good job in season of, next man up mentality. That's one thing, but Robinson also has to get them guys who fit and make sense. And the fact that, he's able to understand that someone like Nate Jones is a good fit. That's a credit to him and his vigilance as a general manager. Will, you said you wanted to put a pin in the injury conversation. I drew a pin on my note sheet so that I wouldn't forget. I'm taking this pin out now. What say you about the injuries?
So I think something that doesn't get, and I guess I should say doesn't get talked enough about by other people, but the weirdest and worst thing is the way the injuries have happened. It's, there's certain narratives that, some of us on the podcast may believe in and some of us may not, where injuries on the offensive line have affected, quarterback play, rushing attempts, all that. And similarly with the rookie class with Caleb Farley getting hurt, you just have to imagine what a different world this would be if the injured player, just a few key injured players would never have gotten hurt. Like, how much different would we think about this team if Caleb Farley's playing and he's taking over Jenkins' spot, and it's
Yeah.
Jenkins, Fulton, Molden, and Chris Jackson as like your two inside guys and then your two boundary guys. Like, I mean, everybody would be talking about how good and I mean, people are talking about it, but it's like things like that. Like, if when LaJuan got hurt, they had just left Raidens at tackle and then they let him play there, and then you don't have to play Bobby Hart. And, you know, it, like these little decisions that or little accidents that seem to have these big ripple effects, like they've been lucky to survive them the way they have. But it just like I constantly find myself going down a wormhole of like, or a rabbit hole of what could have happened if they could have just stayed healthy or these small things were changed.
Here's an interesting question I want to ask the two of you. You can pick two players, not named Derrick Henry, who have missed at least a game for the Titans this year, to, instead of that fate, have had a clean bill of health throughout the entire season. Which two are you picking?
Julio, for sure. And the second one is probably Farley, just because I feel like he's important for the future, and I think getting reps this season would have been pretty important for him.
I didn't even think about Julio.
I'll go Julio and mine would be Julio and LaJuan. Although Bud Dupree is probably a close second to LaJuan.
See, I was thinking like I was in a different direction.
Been out there at least, you know.
I was thinking Rashad Weaver. Do y'all remember how freaking dominant Rashad Weaver was in the preseason? And imagine him with this defensive line instead of like, you know, extra snaps for Pecco or, you know, just random guys that they throw out there and pretend they're defensive ends sometimes. Like, he would have been so good on this. And he will, he's not dead. Like, I mean, he will be good on this defensive line next year. But, man, him and Autry, like, all those big bodies, like, that would have been perfect for what this defense needs. And then Farley, of course, because, I mean, if he stays healthy, like, he was rusty and like, you know, he was going through it, but we've seen what a difference a year made with Fulton. You know, just be out there and be taking reps and moving around, like, even if you're not great, you know, we've seen what can happen in a year. So that would have been important.
I heard you say Rashad Weaver preseason, and I also remember that Trayvon Coley got put on IR after one of the preseason games, and he looked awesome. And I think once we saw that, we probably should have been like, okay, this defensive line is going to be great this season, because if those guys are dominating in a preseason setting, then something was clearly working even before the season started.
Yeah, I mean, we could take legitimate stuff from the preseason. Like, Ola looked good. He's looked good when he's played. I mean, David Long looked great. Monty Rice looked great. Like, I think we learned that preseason has some value outside of just entertainment, but, you know, you've just got to be careful not to fall in love with, like, receivers.
Yeah, I think that of the changes the NFL has made in my football-watching lifetime, a three-game preseason is the best one, because I have always said I did not like having four preseason games. Never said it didn't matter. Always said it didn't matter enough to do it four times. I think they hit the sweet spot with three. I was interested in all three games. Like you said, well, we took things away, and we didn't have to endure that fourth game where it's people we're never going to see again for the most part out there. I thought it worked out great.
Yeah, I agree. And I never thought I would, but I do agree with that.
Yes, we are all preseason fans here.
Let's talk about the Titans offense, guys, because Matias, you made up the comment that, you know, this Titans team is heading in a direction where they could perhaps get to the Super Bowl. They're not going to do that, I don't think, if the offense keeps playing this way. Now, again, the big question looming is, when does Derrick Henry return? And we won't know the answer to that question for still some time. But without Derrick Henry, this offense has been underwhelming. And we knew they would take a step back. We knew they wouldn't be as good without Derrick Henry. But we didn't expect them to sputter. And outside of situational football, where, you know, they've been good in the red zone, good in short yardage, it hadn't been great. I think you can blame a lot of different parts of the offense for that. But what do you guys think needs to change? And we'll talk to Teron about this too. But what needs to change for this offense to start again, not necessarily being explosive, because they lost that element with Henry gone and now Julio Jones on injured reserve, but to be efficient.
It's tough. I don't want to go directly into the Todd Downing thing, because I feel like Will has more emotional, more thoughts on it than I do. But yeah, I mean, the Titans have too many drives that are awful. They're just not efficient. They end within like 3 to 5 plays. They barely get any yards, and then they have to punt it away. And I mean, that has to change. But that's a very general thing, because there are a lot of different factors that go into that. I think the pass blocking needs to get better. I don't know if it will, because it's been pretty hit or miss the entire season. I do think getting Luan back would go a ways toward fixing some of those issues. And the run game is bad. Like, it's rough. But I don't know if the run game really matters all that much, because whenever they run play action, like, it's fine. Like, they find open receivers. And they're really good at just faking the run. Like, even on the goal line, on the pass to Michael Pruitt that ended up in a touchdown, like, they faked me out. They faked the camera guy out on the broadcast feed. Like, it was that good. Like, and Derrick Henry's on the game. So it's not totally exclusive that you can only run play action with Derrick Henry. And I think if they do that more, I do think the offense will be more efficient, and a lot of these drives will end up being better. But I don't know if Todd Downing sees it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to beat this same dead horse too many times, but, you know, they can always do more play action. That always seems to work for them. The problem is they started running the ball well in the second half. Like, that, the story should have been how much better the second half of football was for the running backs than the last six halves before it. But because they were so conservative and they didn't score, you know, they didn't put the game away, it's more about, like, you know, the Saints coming back. But, I mean, Deonta Foreman, he had two catches that were pretty good. I know he had one in the first half. I know he had the long one that went for like 50 yards or whatever, the screen. And then there were a couple of times, especially I think Peterson's like last carry, or like one of his last few carries, where he went for 8 yards, and he cut, the way he cut was so violent, and he's like actually ran, like he looked like Adrian Peterson for a second. And I was like, okay, cool, that guy's still in there. It's just we need to work on the chemistry, and he needs to be able to remember that Bobby Hart's not on the left side. Like, I mean, he's going to be permanently scarred from that. So what can they do better? I mean, obviously, like, if you're going to run it, you know, it would be better to learn warm-ups when you weren't going against, or, you know, Aaron Donald 1 week, and then Davenport and Cam Jordan the next, and the best run defense in NFL. Like, that would have helped make things smoother. I mean, Marcus Johnson looks good. Like, he's looked good every time he's been targeted. I don't know why he hasn't been a bigger part of the offense. Like, I forget what game it was. Maybe it was the Colts game when they were at home, or maybe it was Jacksonville, but there was a game where he had two catches that went for like 45 yards, and I was like, oh, that's cool, and then he disappeared for 5 weeks. So, I mean, make him more part of the offense, like figure out how to use him and A.J. Brown together in a way that, you know, makes it uncomfortable for defensive backs to play over there. Like, I mean, there's a ton of little things. It would also help if they didn't settle for field goals when they did in this past game, because I think they got to the red zone. Didn't they kick 3 field goals total? Because I think you would have to, right? I think they kicked 3 field goals anyway. But if you just punch in one of those, the game is never close. So, I mean, just work on those things, like get it a little bit crisper. But, I mean, I don't think they're as far away as maybe the scores would indicate, and I'm hoping that the Texans game kind of provides a chance for them to relax everybody a little bit.
Will, how many times did the Titans run play action on Sunday?
7.
How many of those 7 plays resulted in a pass completion?
7.
Yeah. I think we know where the sweet spot is for this group, huh?
Yeah, it sure would be nice if Todd Downing had ever looked at those numbers before.
I'm glad you brought that stat to our attention. I want to talk about Ryan Tannehill. Will seems to think that I'm gonna go scorched earth on him. I'm not. But before we talk about Ryan Tannehill and give our opinions for how he has played throughout the 2021 season, we're going to get someone else's opinion. We're going to bring Teron Davenport of ESPN.com into the show. And we will, before anything else, because we're going to talk about a lot with Teron, but first we're going to ask him what he thinks about what Ryan Tannehill has done throughout this season. That coming up here on No Nonsense. Joined now by Teron Davenport of ESPN.com. He covers the Titans for NFL Nation. Teron, the main reason we wanted to have you on is because we wanted to have a discussion about Ryan Tannehill and what he's done for the Titans this season. There's been a lot of debate and discussion about what he has and what he hasn't been able to do for the team this year. They're 8-2, but there have been some ugly turnovers. How do you, I guess, rate, without getting into nonsense like a 1 to 10 scale or anything like that, how do you rate what Ryan Tannehill has done for the Titans this year?
Well, I think there's a lot of room for improvement. It's a bit different from what we've seen in the past just because of the level of interceptions that he has. I think when you look at just his overall title, and a lot of Titans fans get upset when I use this phrase, I don't think it's a bad thing because Dak Prescott, Joe Montana, Tom Brady, these are all guys who at once were what I'm about to call Ryan Tannehill, and that's a game manager. And I think the role that he's carrying this year, or just how he's filling that role, is not the same because of the turnovers. But if you look at what you ask him to do, I think he's operating this offense efficiently. And although they're not, you know, scoring in two or three plays, they're still effective on offense situation-wise.
You know, over the past 2 years, we saw Tannehill put up like Pro Bowl type of numbers. He was one of the best downfield throwers in the league.
Right.
And none of that's there this year. The explosiveness is not there. How much of that do you think is him and mistakes that are being made? And how much of that is attributable to just the stuff he's had to go through with the revolving door of receivers and offensive linemen?
Yeah, I think that does have a lot to do with it. He's taken some shots. They just haven't connected, unfortunately. I mean, there have been, you know, some downfield shots that he's taken. But another thing that factors into that, and it's not all the sacks, you know, in the times that he's hurried or hit. It's not always, you know, on the offensive line. But when you look at the inability to push the football down the field, that does have a bit to do with it. You can't really call those deep shots as much, because he's getting rocked a little bit more than he has in the past. Then at the same time, the play-action passing game, like you go to play-action, a lot of people look at that and say, hey, you know, you go to play-action just because of the run fake. It's more than just a run fake, because typically in play-action, you have that running back blocking after he, you know, takes that play fake, so that gives you max protection, which gives those routes time to go down the field, but it's just not timing up. And it's unfortunate because I really thought that Josh Reynolds coming aboard, because if you go back and watch his A&M tape, that guy was a legit deep threat. He averaged 17 yards per reception. And I remember at the Senior Bowl catching bombs, but it just unfortunately didn't happen for him in the time when he was with the Titans. So that definitely has a lot to do with it.
Hey, Teron, it's Will. So you touched on this a little bit. I would guess, depending on the game, a major problem with how little play action Todd Downing calls. Like, they're down something like 5 or 6% of the dropbacks, which, I mean, people don't think that's a lot, but I mean, it's a large chunk. I mean, it moves them to middle of the pack instead of the front of the pack where they were last year. And I'm not going to say that Tannehill would be the same quarterback if they were throwing more play action. What I would say, though, is all of his numbers are better when they run play action. It seems to put more of a rhythm in the offense. It more than this, you know, empty set, five wide, you know, shifting guys out and doing that. Like, it seemed like he was more comfortable in that last year. The offensive line was more comfortable running that last year. And Todd Downing has continued to have success there, and then as soon as he has success, he pulls back and goes the other direction, for almost no reason. I mean, am I crazy in thinking that if this team would run more play action, that it would look a little bit more like they did last year?
Yeah, it could look a little bit more, but another thing you got to consider is a lot of times, like, if it's 3rd and 13, I mean, naturally linebackers are going to bite on a run fake, but for the most part, they're not going to bite as hard as they would if it's 3rd and 4 or 2nd and short. So a lot of what you're seeing, and it's so interesting. This is one of the things I love about football, how much things are interrelated, right? So not a lot of success on 1st down changes just everything that you have to do because you're already behind the sticks on 2nd, So if you have more success on 1st down, and get into that 2nd and 6, 2nd and 4, those type of situations, then that play action is very much something that will be in play. But I think down and distance has had its role in that too. So that's a big reason for me as to why it's not the same. But then also Arthur Smith just had a passion for working play action, right? And hitting A.J. Brown on that slant or that bomb to Khalif Raymond. I think what you're seeing is just a different play caller, directing the offense.
And sort of talking about things that Arthur Smith did really well that Downing's struggling with, the scripted plays, I mean, they would just be better punting the first. This is my opinion. They'd be better punting the first 2 first downs and then just letting Tannehill put his input in after that. Because, I mean, it is it's either fake razzle dazzle or it's inefficient play after inefficient play. I mean, I don't like it. Is there any reason why the scripted plays seem to be so hard this year other than just, I guess, they have to deal with so many injuries?
Well, that's another area where down and distance comes into play, right? Because, you could have a script written up, but it's just like what did Mike Tyson used to say? Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Yeah. And you can have a script written up and want to do, okay, these are our 15 plays that I know we're going to work with, but what happens if you get a penalty on 2nd down and now you're at, instead of 2nd and 5, you're at 2nd and 20 or 15. You know what I mean? So those things have a lot to do with it. It's just a lot of times that script, it is something that they try to stick to, but you have to get away from it just because of situations. I think Todd Downing, it's hot and cold with him because some days I'll watch him and just be like, yo, he's really in his bag. Like, he's in a groove. These plays are layered. He's setting things up, tucking this away so this will be good later. But then other times it's like, what? I mean, help me out here, man. Like, I'm trying to understand what it is you're trying to do. So there is a lot of up and down with it, absolutely.
Hey, Teron, Matias here. Moving from, I guess, a little bit of the negativity maybe to something more positive, we've talked a lot about the improvement of the Titans' defensive line, and you actually recently wrote an article about the pass rush and how well it's been playing. What would you say has been the biggest change from last year to this year, aside from adding talent that you've seen with the defensive line and their level of play? Or is it just the addition of that talent that has made the biggest improvement?
I think it's all those, right? And I guess the best way to put it is starting with the front end and the back end being together. And one of the things that people would always say, last year, I remember, and I got called silly and off base for this, but I explained that, hey, listen, that back end, if they start challenging at the line of scrimmage and start knocking off that timing, that's going to make everything better because that gives those guys an extra tick to get home. And, I mean, they're not challenging as much as I thought they should have, but the coverage on the back end is a lot better. And you look at Jeffrey Simmons, his first sack last week, that's an excellent example. So I think you're seeing that, right? The back end and front end being married perfectly. And then in addition to that, Denico Autry, that addition is not one to be slept upon. That guy came in and, I mean, he's what I call a dog. Like, that's absolutely everything that he brings to the table. And you heard how Jeffrey Simmons gushed about him and how he said that he's learning things. And it's really good to have a guy to actually, be out there and, like, tell you something, give you a tip, and then actually show you exactly how it's executed. And that's what you're seeing. And then, Harold Landry, he's become a closer. Like, he went from a middle reliever to, You know, the guy you come in is to shut the game down. Like, he's closing the deal on these quarterbacks. And I think just collectively they're doing really well. And it's funny because they're blitzing a lot less this year because they don't have to, right? But when they do, it's pretty effective. You see Elijah Molden and David Long blitzing pretty well. But I think that's really what it is, that front four and that secondary, they're matched really well.
As a former receiver, I'm curious what you think about the Julio Jones saga so far this season, because I think when they traded for him, everyone sort of said, you know, don't expect this guy to practice a lot. He's older, but it's all going to pay off when he's out there making plays on Sunday. Well, now, not only is he not practicing, but he was becoming perennially week to week, and then finally it's like they put the situation out of its misery and put him on IR, which will keep him out for the next few weeks. Is this normal? Like, I feel like even receivers who continue to get opportunities into their, you know, early 30s, they're not week to week like this. And do you think this situation changes at all when he comes off of IR?
Man, let me tell you something. I can't tell you from experience because fortunately I never had to deal with it. But they said once that hamstring monster jumps on you, cancel Christmas, man. Like, it's just something that stays with you. There's you heard how AJ was. Luke, when on that Friday, when, you know, he was asked about that hamstring, he didn't want to mention it. So I think regardless of age, that's something that's going to be a factor for anybody. And with Julio, and I've said this before, the thing with him, and I gathered that from actually being able to see him in person, he puts a lot of torque and pressure on his joints because his cuts are so hard. Next time you're at, well, I can't say next time, Luke, because the next time we're at practice, you won't see him. But if you think back to some of the practices, listen to him run routes and then listen to Chester Rogers run routes.
Okay.
Listen to him run routes and listen to even AJ to use similar body types. The thump and the impact when his feet hit the ground is totally different. Mm-hmm. And I think that has a lot to do with those soft tissue injuries. That's something that Alshon Jeffrey, I remember talking to his trainer, Steve Whitehead. He had told me about Alshon, and I remember seeing him, and he said he actually taught Alshon how to run different. And in doing that, they were able to cut out a lot of the soft tissue injuries that he had. He had a history like Julio Jones did. So, I mean, that's just kind of my perspective on there. Once you get a hamstring, like, I don't care if you're injury prone or not, you know, that's just something that, you know, it's just time. It's just time. You have to give it time. And they tried to do it and gradually bring him along. And it got to a point where he was okay. But then, you know, making that cut. And if you just kind of simulate the motion at the top of your routes, right, you plant with your right foot and then you turn with your left foot and break out towards the sideline. That's a lot of pressure on your hamstring. And that's where it happened.
Well, I remember that video that you put on Twitter last week, I guess it was, where he looked like he ran like a quick out and came up grabbing at it.
Yep. That was, and that's exactly why I went through that simulation, you know, planting on your right foot and then turning with your left. And like, you could feel your hamstring, like not being gassed, but being utilized, you know, because that is in effect, your hamstring is a gas pedal. You know what I mean? So that's why it happened right then and there. And he knew it. And that's why he had the expletive. You know, in the video.
So going from Julio to talk more about AJ, I mean, he's always had issues with drops every now and then. Like, you know, it would be 10 really consistent games and then one where there was a hiccup and he had two or three drops. That doesn't matter. My big focal point is without Derrick Henry and without Julio, let's assume that Julio is on a limited snap count or not even in the game until the playoffs. The only way I can see this offense really being able to use A.J. Brown effectively is if they start to use him more in the slot. And they were doing that when he had so many big plays against Kansas City and Buffalo. And I think even Indianapolis, his touchdown. I know he had one against Jacksonville. But my point is he's starting to get extra attention when he's outside. There's really nobody else. I mean, Marcus Johnson, maybe he eventually earns respect enough where teams can't cheat so much. If you keep having 100-yard games, that'll happen. But the only way I can see him not getting followed by the team's best boundary corner or getting enough safety help over the top is if they start really consider moving him inside and leaving somebody like Nick Westbrook-Ikhina or, you know, somebody else opposite those other two receivers. Is there a way you can use him that's not in the slot where you can get off of that double coverage and that, you know, extra, you know, safety leaning that way and, you know, everybody keying on that receiver?
Yeah, absolutely. You could work him out of the backfield, which is something they started to do a little bit. I think you can still go to those bunch formations. And I mean, if you go to bunch, right, like a trips type of look, you're going to naturally have some safety help over top. But what you do is do like switch releases. And they actually did that a few times where he was the outside guy, right? And they had Chester Rogers, you know, as the number three. And then Westbrook-Ikhina was number two. Even Josh Reynolds at one point was number two. And what they ended up doing was Reynolds or Ikhina, the point man, the guy on the line of scrimmage, he would run that slant. Rogers will run kind of like a wheel route or an outbreaking route, and A.J. Brown would come off the line 1-2 and then break to the slant as well. And that was a way just to kind of like create a whole lot of traffic there and give the DB some like bodies to sort through before he could take on A.J. Brown. And they did that a couple times for him. So that's something you could do. The other thing you could always do is use them in motion, right? Because when you use motion, it's a lot harder to get a jam on a guy when, you know, you're not right there on the line of scrimmage and he's off the ball a little bit. So that's something else. But to be honest, like looking at the last couple of games, that's one thing that I picked up. Lattimore didn't travel with him at all. Like he was pretty much at right corner most of the game, or left corner rather, most of the game. So that didn't really happen as much against Jacksonville. I keep associating Ramsey with the Jaguars. Against the Rams, you didn't see that as much either. So the concept is there, like the theory is there, but it's not happening as much as you would think. And I think that's just because, you know, teams are just like, I don't know that they feel he's to the point where you have to shadow him with your top corner. It just kind of seems that way from, you know, some of the games where you have elite premier corners. And the other thing is, even moving them into the slot, sometimes like corners like Jalen Ramsey, like he could play that nickel spot just as well. You know, he could play in space as much as, you know, you have him playing the field or boundary side. So then that's how Lattimore is too. So there are some corners that are really good like that, to where I don't care where you line up, they could go wherever. And I'm going to tell you a guy who's up and coming that is going to be that guy in the next year or two. And it's someone who I loved pre-draft, is someone who I'm very high on now, and that's Christian Fulton.
Yeah, he's a stud.
One last question for you, Teron, and that is, what does this Titans offense need to do to get out of their what has appeared to be like a post-Derrick Henry haze? Because over the last 2 weeks, they've been pretty good situationally, converting most of their red zone chances, good in short yardage. But the running game has been inefficient a lot of times, and against New Orleans, they really struggled to move the ball. Granted, two talented defenses right in a row,
right.
But what are you looking to happen, maybe in a get-right spot, if you will, against a really bad Texans team, to get this offense ticking and clicking without Derrick Henry?
Yeah, well, you said it. They need to not play the Saints or Rams. That's first and foremost, because both of those defenses are disgusting. I think, you know, what I would do, frankly, first play of the game, like you talk about scripting plays, hey, first play of the game, Adrian Peterson is in the game. I'm going hard action, play action, and I'm running A.J. Brown, Chet, whoever it may be. I'm running somebody on that post route, and I'm trying to hit a deep shot to let this Texans team know right from the jump, like, look, man, I'm putting my hand in your chest and I'm grabbing your heart and I'm taking it out. That's really what it's like. Go for the kill right away. And if you don't score a touchdown on that, you go tempo, right? And you know, you go that play action deep shot, whoever's running that deep route, tell them to come off the field, send another receiver in there and go tempo. I think that's really what you have to do. And Luke, you've heard me ask Tannehill about it, heard me ask Todd Downing about it, and bring up the fact that it creates a sense of urgency. And that's why you go tempo, because you want that sense of urgency. You can't start off slow. Like this team right here, the Texans, they're like a mutt on the side of the road just waiting to die after it got ran over. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you want to kill that thing right away. Like, don't even give it a reason to live. And that's why that first drive, I'm going out and I'm setting the tone right from the jump that we are taking shots and we are going to try to score. Not try to. We are going to score this football as many times as possible. I think that's really the approach that they need to have. Like, they have to, you know, it is a get-right game, like you mentioned. It's one of those games where you got to put everything together offensively. It's kind of like what the Bills did to the Jets, right? You know, the Jaguars smacked them upside the head, and they said, well, you know what, we want to show the world that we are a top-level offensive team. And that's what they did against the Jets. And for the Titans, you know, they got smacked upside the head offensively 2 weeks in a row. So it's like, hey, look, we want to show the world that even though Derrick Henry is the MVP of the league, we could still do some things on offense without him. So I think that's the approach to Todd Downing. I would expect him to be very aggressive this week.
Theron, thanks so much for the time. We always love having you on, and we appreciate the insight and the knowledge that you bring.
Oh, no problem, man. It's always fun to come on and talk a little shop. And it's pretty cool to be on the other side of your questions, Luke. You know, I always like your questions for Coach Vrabel, and I know he likes them too.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Teron.
You guys got it. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
A mutt on the side of the road waiting to die. That may be one of my favorite lines ever spoken in our 5 years of doing this show. We will be back in 30 seconds on No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. All right, guys, as we talked about before we had Teron on, we were going to get his opinion on Ryan Tannehill, which we did. Now it's time for our opinions on Ryan Tannehill. And I'm pretty much with Teron. I think that he's done a good job of managing the games. And like Teron said, that phrase has almost become a pejorative, but I don't mean it in that way. He's guided the Titans to wins. He's, for the most part, done what he's needed to. It's just I don't see him elevating the players around him in the way that he has in years past, even when Henry was still in there. The downfield assassin that we saw in 2020 and 2019 has sort of disappeared. And the turnovers have not been great. It's 3 weeks in a row. Granted, the one this week didn't count because of a roughing the passer penalty that a lot of people even thought was bogus. But 3 weeks in a row, like maddening interceptions. One into triple coverage against the Colts. Threw a quick out against Jalen Ramsey on his first throw of the game against the Rams. Horrible decision. And then he threw like an arm punt to Marcus Williams against the Saints this week. That's my biggest criticism of him. He's still the man. Like Vrabel said, the Titans go as he goes. I just think that the production is not there. The explosiveness is not there. The elevation of his teammates is also not there.
Yeah, I agree. Even though I feel like we had the same type of conversation last week.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, nothing has changed because he played okay in the Saints game. But like you said, that one to Marcus Williams that got called back, like that was something that he just didn't really do the past couple of seasons. And we've seen it a little bit too often this year. And I don't know why. Maybe he's just trying to make more things happen as the Titans offense is dealing with more injuries and just not as efficient. Maybe he's just trying to fit plays where they're not there. Or maybe he's just not seeing or trusting his eyes. I'm not totally sure. But he's been fine. Like he's been probably above average. He just hasn't been as amazing as he was the last two seasons. And it's interesting because a lot of the like metrics based grading and whatever, like I know we hate PFF, but PFF is one of them. And there's also the completion percentage over expected that's like making its rounds across the analytics community in order to gauge a quarterback's performance. Like he's in the same spot that he was last year. Like they believe that he's having a top five quarterback season. And it's interesting. I assume a lot of those things take into account his situation, the offense, the injuries, the pass protection, and all of that. And they assume that they think that he's playing just as well as he has the past couple of years. I don't. I do think he's taking a little bit of a step back. But I also am conscious that the pass protection has been awful. I mean, he's the most sacked quarterback in the league. He hasn't had Julio Jones for barely any games this year. And Todd Downing hasn't exactly been a ruthless offensive coordinator like Arthur Smith was for a lot of the past couple of years. So I don't know. I don't know where I stand on him. I think he could definitely play better. And if he does, like, man, the Titans offense is really going to reach a ceiling if Derrick Henry and Julio Jones come back from injury and play like their normal selves. But, you know, the jury is kind of out on whether Tannehill will be able to reach that ceiling this season.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's all about context, right? Do his numbers look worse this year? Like, yeah, I mean, they do, undoubtedly. Like, you can't change that. Like, I would say I wouldn't put as much emphasis on the interception in the end zone because it didn't actually count. Like, it's not like it's, you know, and it's not some big injustice that, like, oh, the Saints were robbed and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, you can't hit the quarterback. He gets hit all the time. He gets a lot of those penalties because he's constantly hit. It's just, a roulette wheel that people keep spinning. And if you keep hitting him in the head, eventually you'll get it called, whether you actually do it forcefully or not. Like, the same thing happened in the Colts game versus the Titans. Like, that, you know, when Jeffrey Simmons hit a guy before the whistle blew and he got a flag, like, you know, that you can't complain about calls, all that. I would strike that from the record. But on the whole, like, the context of the situation isn't he's not elevating people around him. The context is everybody around him is dying. His Hall of Fame running back is out. His left tackle has been in and out of the lineup. His right guard has been in and out of the lineup. Like, his supposed number two receiver is in and out of the lineup. Last year, he got 14 games from A.J. Brown and 14 games from Corey Davis. Like, he probably won't get 14 games from, I guess he might get 14 from A.J. if he stays healthy and plays all the rest of them. But, like, who else is going to start, like, truly start for this team for more than 8 games at wide receiver? Like, they can't decide Chester if they like Westbrook Rogers. Or Tina. No, I don't even think he's starting. Like, the offense. Yeah, but I mean, like, that's the thing is, it's like, it's funny because it is a giant house of cards that's already fallen. Like, the only reason they can score points is because Tannehill is able to, you know, I mean, I guess it's not elevating Marcus Johnson because I expect him to get 100 yards every game. So I guess that's cool. But, like, anytime any of these people catch passes, it is him elevating people because these are not guys that were making plays on other teams. These are, you know, undrafted free agents or, you know, guys who were cut in afterthoughts in free agency because, you know, the other two big factors of this 3-point offense are out. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, it feels like we're shooing away the idea of not having the same offensive line, not having the same receivers, and having a new system that's being implemented, like, poorly in front of you. Like, feels like every other year that would be a pretty big deal, but because the Titans are winning and people want to look for something to point at, it's like, well, imagine how good they'd be if Tannehill was better. It's like, if Tannehill was better, he'd win the MVP. I mean, he's dragging nobodies up and making them viable starters. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like Teron said, like, Marshawn Lattimore wasn't trailing AJ. That's not how they gave him extra attention. Like, they would just shade safeties and keep eyes on him and focus on him the whole time in coverage. But, I mean, there were several times where Lattimore was on Marcus Johnson when he was making those receptions. And it's not because Marcus Johnson is lights out better than Lattimore. It's because Tannehill went through his progressions when he was given time. He hit guys in stride. Like, I don't know. It seems like we downplay the things that are going wrong, and then we make everything else so big, you know, or we downplay the things that are going, that are going right for him. But every time he does something wrong, it's just emphasized more and more. It seems like a weird argument to have. I don't understand it.
Last topic before we get into Stop the Nonsense. Pro Bowl voting for the NFL opened on Tuesday. Instead of going through a list of, you know, this guy, pick one player on this team that is the most worthy of a Pro Bowl designation. I think I know where Will is going to go.
This is tough. I mean, it's between Simmons and Landry, right?
Yeah, like, I think it's really between those two.
I would say Simmons. I feel like he's been slightly more dominant. I don't know. Landry's been awesome. I'm going to go with Simmons.
Landry, because I think Landry's been more consistent. Simmons has kind of exploded over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. I think there's a chance all three of the big pass rushers, Landry, Simmons, Autry, get in.
Yeah, Byard should be mentioned too.
Oh, honestly, of course.
Oh my God, I forgot about Byard.
Yeah, like I assumed we would just like lump him in already. Like, I mean, he's already in.
I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna say Kevin Byard. That's my answer. I don't know why I forgot about him.
Because Harold Landry's so dominant.
Yes.
Somebody who should be mentioned, who Teron mentioned at the end of his interview with us. Christian Fulton is really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was targeted, and I don't know where that PFF stat came from, where he was targeted one time, and it was a pass breakup. That's not true. Like, he was the first man around several times, and I believe he had three passes disrupted and knocked away. Like, there was no completions on him.
Football Focus was wrong?
I know, it's crazy. I don't know if they take their stuff from man coverage only. I that was confusing me because I swear he had more. But yeah, Fulton's been awesome. Like, people forget he put DK Metcalf in a blender so bad that it messed up the rest of his season. Like, I mean, he was absolutely cooking everybody that went against him. He was playing with a bum. DK Metcalf
whined from the opening whistle to when the Titans scored in overtime in that game.
Yeah, because he was just begging for targets, and then when he got targets, he couldn't catch them. Like, it was brutal. Like, Christian Fulton is outstanding. Like, I firmly believe that if he played the full season, he would be a Pro Bowl player, undoubtedly. I mean, he's one of the best young corners in the NFL.
I think the problem with him will be name recognition.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that will help him is that he's on a team like the Titans, when everybody is searching for answers on why they're good, and if he gets an interception or two over the next few weeks, you know, everybody will lose their mind and they'll talk about how good he is, even though he's been that good the whole time. Like I said with the Mike Vrabel thing, when we talked about that a couple of weeks ago before the Rams game, everybody has this energy where they don't actually watch Titans games, and they've latched onto the idea that Derrick Henry is the best running back of all time. And they're right. Like, he's awesome. Like, that he's undoubtedly a Hall of Fame player in my book. But when he went out and the team kept winning, they have to find a place to shoot that energy to explain, you know, to not look like idiots for not watching, yeah. Which is where the Mike Vrabel Coach of the Year stuff comes from, and it's where the Kevin Byard Defensive Player of the Year stuff comes from. Maybe we can channel that towards Christian Fulton getting the recognition he deserves, too.
Yeah, the reason I would change my answer to Byard, and I don't know how I forgot about him. That was bad on Matthias and my part. He runs the show. That's the phrase that Vrabel always uses when he gets asked about Byard. He says he runs the show for us on defense. And so in terms of, you know, an overall contribution, he has the stats, 5 interceptions, nearly 50 tackles. He's involved on nearly every play. He had the fumble recovery for a touchdown against the Jags. But beyond that, what he does from a communication standpoint, from an alignment standpoint, he runs the show. And so, you know, if we're talking about most valuable player on this Titans team so far this year, I think it's KB.
Yeah, I agree. And it's crazy what a difference a year makes, because last year we were talking about him like on a steady decline because he was not himself last year. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't making plays. He was so hesitant on everything. And this year he's the best I think we've ever seen him play. And the whole defense has been better off for it.
You know, there's an old hymn called None of Self and All of Thee, and it's about, like, you know, sacrificing yourself for God. What has happened with Kevin Byard is none of Vrabel, all of Bowen. that has been what has happened. Any remarks on that?
I was waiting for Matthias to chime in, but I'll do it ahead. When you said there's an old hymn, it's like, and you were referring to that, I was like, and this hymn is about Jeffrey Simmons and Kevin Byard. No, I'm like, I don't think so. but I get what you're saying now.
Let's do.
I was waiting for Will's haiku. That's what I was waiting for.
That I've written out.
Well, if the Titans can beat we're not going to bore you with an in-depth preview of the 1-8 Texans. You can, if you want that, you can go someplace else. We just talk about fun stuff on here. It's time for Stop the Nonsense, guys. As we get into Stop the Nonsense, I don't know where I was going with that. I'll start. my Stop the Nonsense close runner-up is Marquise Flowers, who's a former NFL player who, if you look at his Twitter timeline, it's just like tons of tweets at Titans fans. Very bizarre. I'm going to go with the Robert Saleh, Rex Ryan thing. Like, what are we doing here? Rex Ryan called out Saleh, who coaches a 2-win football team. And then Saleh got asked about it. It sounded like on the radio. And Saleh was like, if he's got a problem with me, he knows where to find me. I'm like, dude. And he didn't say it in a way that was like a, you know, meet you around the corner after, you know, meet you behind the building after. It wasn't like that. But, can you imagine if, if the Titans lose and someone on TV is like, man, Mike Vrabel is just overrated and not very good. And we're like, Mike Vrabel, what do you think about that? Like, Vrabel would give us this look and be like, next question. And then, but Saleh was like, he knows where he can find me if he's got a problem with me. I'm like, dude, just stop. You've won 2 games. You're not in a position to be making comments like that. And then his brother had this tweet on Twitter, you know, the place where tweets happen. And he's like, you know, Rex Ryan needs to shut his mouth and go back to podiatry. I'm like, okay, dude, like, y'all need to calm down. This is stupid.
Imagine getting riled up by Rex Ryan.
Exactly. I'd be riled up by the fact that I've won 2 games.
Yeah, in 2021. Insane. I'll do mine because I'm actually pretty pumped up about it. So, y'all have to have seen this. We haven't even talked about this. But did y'all see on Sunday morning when everybody was talking about how great Russell Wilson was because he rehabbed for 19 hours a day and they were calling him Wolverine? This is the worst. Like, if there was 4 games in a row where Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger played each other, they would both explode to just outdo the other one and how good they are and how much they're overcoming. It's the worst. Like, the worst thing in the world is when you see these agents that leak out these, like, they leak out, like, wow. I don't know. It's supposed to be a 6-week recovery time, but he's going to make it in 3.
Wilson rehabbed for 19 hours a day. Dude has a wife and kids.
That's the tweet from Ian Rappaport. It says, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson rehabbed 19 hours a day because he's a Wolverine. And Arif Hassan, very funnily, said, so he just moved his finger a lot, right?
Yeah.
But, and it's like, yeah, like, that's what it is. Like, it's, I mean, like, you can't throw. I mean, it's not like, I mean, they're throwing, showing pictures of him, like, throwing and, like, working out. I'm like, he wasn't doing that for 19 hours a day. Like, he was just moving his hand around. And they were like, well, how many hours were you awake today? And he's like, I guess 19. It's like, wow, that's a lot. Like, so you only slept 5 hours? Like, why don't we just say you rehab for 19 hours? And they're like, perfect. I'm just like, quit over-exaggerating these injuries. This is why one of the few things I agree with Mike Vrabel on is because of this rapid timetable stuff where if you say 6 to 10 weeks like they do with Henry and he's not back in 6 weeks, people are going to be like, oh, he's not healing correctly. Like, people set these artificial time markers and they're like, oh, you know, it's a 7-week injury, but he's going to really bust it and try to be back in 4 weeks. And it's like, then it's a 4-week injury.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can't rehab any, like, it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I saw that Sunday and I was like, there's no way this is true. And it's also a finger injury.
Yeah.
I could close this out here with, obviously we have to talk about it, I think, Keyshawn Johnson.
Mm.
Man, I honestly, I didn't want to talk about it, but it's just, it's so dumb, man. Like, why put this out into the world? Why do you feel the need to say that the Titans are not a real 8-2, whatever that's supposed to mean? And then I think Max Kellerman comes in with, maybe if the 8-2 was on a team like the Chiefs, we'd believe it was a real team. Even though we beat the Chiefs 27-3 a couple weeks ago. So, I don't know, man. Like, I think Titans fans get too riled up by this stuff, actually. And I feel like we shouldn't care what other people say. But when Keyshawn Johnson and Max Kellerman go out on national TV and spout off this just BS. It's BS because there's like nothing to back it up. They just don't like the Tennessee Titans because they're not in a big market and they just can't believe that this team is 8-2 and is the one seed and might be the best team in the AFC. They just can't put it through their heads and they don't want it to happen because, of course, they want Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen to be the ones that are 8-2 and the one seed. And the true contender in the AFC, but it's just so stupid, man. It really is.
Yeah, the dumbest thing he said is when he was like, well, you know, if we gave the Chiefs an 8-2 record, then maybe. I'm like, but that's not how this works. You don't, like, you're not given a, it's not like you draw out of a hat. They've earned this record.
Yeah, it's not a rank. It's not the college football ranking.
Exactly.
It's like an objectively true. And look, if they would have only beaten like the Jaguars and Texans somehow 8 times, like, okay, cool. But they played the hardest schedule in the NFL. And they, you're saying it before they play the easiest schedule in the NFL. Like, it's like you're setting yourself up to look like a moron. And it, like, look, you can be stupid. Like, that's fine. Like, you can embarrass yourself. But, like, just don't. Like, this is a reputation that Titans fans have, but it's like we have this reputation of, you know, we just turn into a buzzsaw whenever anybody disrespects us and all that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, but if you say this stuff for attention and you get the attention you crave, but it's negative attention, don't come crying to me in 6 weeks saying, well, Titans fans won't believe this, but I don't think they're a real 14-2 team heading into the last week of the season. It's like, shut up, man. Nobody cares.
Quickly, before we exit, because we were asked to talk about this and we really should, how do we feel about Tennessee Tickle Monsters?
Yeah.
Long pause.
That's a good question. So I hate it. pretty like
am I the only one who didn't see this? Like
Matias, it was all I saw for 48 hours this weekend. From Friday to Sunday morning, I saw nothing other than Tennessee Tickle Monsters.
Well, you didn't write a story where you called them that or anything, did you?
No,
that would have been crazy. Look, it's a terrible nickname, but that's kind of the point, is that it's supposed to be a terrible nickname. But I don't like that point, I guess. Like, I'm like... To me, it's not like, oh, nicknames are silly, so we're going to give us a stupid one. It's like, well, then you just have the least fun nickname of the group, and you're still getting a nickname.
I think it's fun. I think it was just, like, overdone. Like, I got tired. I was like, okay. Like, after the millionth joke about it, it started to get a little old. But, like, I loved that, you know, Simmons or whoever got the first sack on Sunday, and all I saw on the timeline was tickle, tickle. I'm like, okay, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I guess that it is funny when they get a sack and then they like then it pops up because I'm like, okay, but like imagine if that was something cool, like that's what I just keep going back to.
Yeah. All right, that's gonna do it for us. We'll be back next week to recap the Texans game and look ahead to what's after that, which I believe is New England, right?
Correct. That is correct.
All right, we will do that next Wednesday. Until then. Have fun, enjoy yourselves, watch the game, and stop the nonsense.